There are some people who help you see what you take for granted. John O'Donohue is one of them for me. A poet, philosopher, former priest, and author of books on Celtic spirituality, I first got to know O'Donohue in Ireland, where he lives in the Connemara region in the west, a haunting landscape of stone, sea, and rainbows. His latest book is called Beauty, The Invisible Embrace.
I think that there is a natural deep need in the human heart for beauty. And when I was researching the book, it took me 3 years to write this book, and I read over 90 books in preparing for it and researching it.
I love what your mother had to say about that. Would you mind telling us?
Yeah. Somebody asked my mother, because I hadn't been out home for ages and ages and nobody had seen me, and somebody said to my mother, "Where's John? We don't see him at all." And she said, "Beauty has him nearly killed." And it was true for her. But when I was researching the thing for beauty, I was trying to get back to where is the origin of the desire for the beautiful within us, or the origin of that sense. And it emerged that when the baby is born, that we spend our first weeks and months just gazing silently up at the mother's face. And that first face makes a huge imprint on us, because it brings us an awareness of symmetry as the key to the beautiful. So we're always looking for, I suppose, experiences that have some symmetry and order within them, and that also have light, a kind of luminosity and a grace and a truth. And beauty is not synonymous with glamour. I mean, it's reduced to glamour. Glamour has to do with externality, it has to do with fashion, and it has to do with image, and it's hugely commercial. Whereas the beautiful is a far more substantial and deeper presence that actually helps us to link that which is real with that which is ideal.
Well, one of the things I liked about this book is there are, of course, your own prodigious and frequent and huge reflections, because you are a man, a philosopher, and a poet who is able to literally sit at the edge of a bog out on the lakes of Connemara and reflect. And, you know, we don't all get the time to do something like that. But you include a lot of people here who we haven't all met before. Poets from the Western world, Rumi from the Eastern world. There's someone in here called Osip Mandelstam.
Osip Mandelstam, the great Russian poet who died in the Siberian Gulag, and his wife Nadezhda Mandelstam held his whole opus of poetry in her memory, and then they were written down.
Can you please read what you've included here from him?
I have at the very beginning of the book just a little quotation from him. "A blind man recognizes a beloved face by barely touching it with seeing fingers, and tears of joy, the true joy of recognition, will fall from his eyes after a long separation."
Why did you include that particular quotation?
Because I think that beauty has to do with recognition that is very subtle and very oblique, and that sometimes in the most unexpected places the actual presence of beauty surprises us. For instance, a friend of mine, the great American mystic and prophetic poet Daniel Berrigan, has a wonderful poem about the time that he was in prison for the Vietnam protests, and in this khaki grey underworld of the procession of prisoners, one day he spots this little tulip in the corner of the prison yard, and it illuminates all the darkness. Of course, the irony of such illumination against a context of bleakness is that it's often only then that you realise how actually bleak the bleakness is. Another lovely epiphany instance of that is in The Shawshank Redemption, when Tim Robbins breaks into the library and gets to lock the door and put Mozart on, and all the figures stand in the prison yard in trance. But then in the beauty of that music of Mozart, you realise that all the sounds you've heard up to now have been from hell.
Tell us just a little bit about Meister Eckhart. You've become quite a disciple in your own right of Meister Eckhart. He was a mystic.
Yeah.
Tell us more about
him. He was a 13th century mystic, and he was an amazing man. He was a Dominican priest. One of the lovely things from him that I like is that, you know, in our culture that we have this huge tendency to equate identity with biography, especially in America, that you are what happens to you. And, you know, Meister Eckhart completely would disagree agree with that. And he says there's a place within the soul that neither time nor space nor flesh nor no created thing can touch. And I take that to mean that there's a place within each of us where no one has ever got to us, where we're undamaged and where there's a seamless sureness and natural confidence and tranquility. And I think the intention of beauty and of the spiritual life and of the imagination is to take us as frequently as possible to that inner kind of place.
Do you think perhaps it's easier for yourself to find beauty? You live in one of the most beautiful places in the world, I think I might say. What about people who live in misery, people after the tsunami, people in Chechnya? What about people who live in grit and rubble?
Absolutely. I mean, it's naturally hugely difficult to see outer images of beauty in situations like that. But people who live in places like that are not unacquainted with beauty. Pascal said in one of his great statements, he said, in difficult times, you should always endeavor to keep something beautiful in your heart. And I think there are people who can do 5, 10, 15, 20 year stretches in the bleak abyss of a prison cell, and they still hold their minds through the memories of little icons of beauty that they have and that they still hope to be among. I think no mind can survive complete bleakness without some icon of beauty. And as we said early on in the interview, a little icon of beauty can go a long, long way.
Well, John O'Donohue, author, philosopher, poet, and friend, thank you. That was beautiful.
Thank you so much, Jackie.
Beauty, the invisible embrace.